Hi, Natalie Dale here, and welcome back to GDOT's podcast, Ahead of the Curve. We have some amazing return guests today talking about all things policy, government affairs, what happened this last legislative session. We are on pins and needles. We're going to read through the Georgia State Constitution word for word. Just kidding. Stay with us. It's going to be very entertaining. We're going to have a little civics lesson. So stay tuned. A lot of really exciting, important information here. You won't want to miss. We'll be right back.
Our employees are the face of Georgia DOT. They work to promote our mission, share our story, and make a difference in local communities across the state. It's a big responsibility. Are you up for the challenge? Georgia DOT is looking for hard workers of all ages to join our team. Georgia DOT is looking to fill positions across the state in roles such as highway maintenance technicians, hero operators, entry-level civil engineers, survey or construction technicians, and more. Visit www.dot.ga.gov to learn more today.
All right, welcome back to Ahead of the Curve. As you know, we are the GDOT podcast. We talk about the people, the programs, and the projects that keep GDOT ahead of the curve. And we have some special repeat guests today, Josh Waller, Director of Policy and Government Affairs, and Abby Handel, Policy and Government Affairs Specialist. Welcome back.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having us.
Happy to be here.
Well, I know that you're happy to be here because that means the legislative session is over, which has got to be a weight off of both of your shoulders. Y'all spend countless hours, especially on days like Crossover Day and Signy Die, many hours. I mean, how many hours do you think that y'all log at the Capitol during the legislative session?
Too many.
Just enough, Abby? Too many or just enough?
Just enough.
Just enough. What was the latest? What was the latest y'all clocked in hour-wise?
I think 11:30.
11:30. Well, because there was a very early end to Signy Die this year. Just not quite at the midnight toll, was it?
Yeah, actually, day 39, I think, ran a little bit longer than day 40.
So got some time back.
We did. We did.
Got some time back. It's exhilarating. You know, I used to work at the Capitol with Josh. There's something about the Capitol that is, other than the two-headed snake upstairs and the two-headed cow, there is an energy in that building during the legislative session, because important things are going on, not just for transportation, but statewide. And we're going to talk about some of those things today, mainly transportation related. But what, Josh, what was your favorite, I guess, what was your best memory from this legislative session?
It's hard. There's so many moments.
It's like picking your favorite child. Was there a resolution that passed? Was there a road dedication that really sort of hit you in the sweet spot?
I'll tell you what, I think the overall session was a big success in terms of the department. You mentioned road dedications. We'll get to that later. There's definitely some road dedications that'll be of note. I think for the department, our ability to get the annual legislation across, the housekeeping bill, as we call it, was definitely a major highlight of the session.
What about you, Abby? Highlight of your session? PBJ Day. Do they still do?
They do.
Okay. That was always the highlight of my session, was PBJ Day. When you look at sort of, we use this podcast to educate mostly about engineering things, how bridges are built, but let's get a little Schoolhouse Rocks here. How does a bill become a law?
Well, we'll cover that. And I think, though, part of it is before a bill can even move through the process, it has to start off as an idea. In terms of the department, we actually begin between sessions. At the end of this session, we're going to start asking folks within the department, subject matter experts, offices, where are challenges they see in terms of the statute as processes evolve. And then we solicit those ideas. Then we take those ideas and actually present them to the GDOT board, and the GDOT board votes to endorse those ideas to be presented to the General Assembly. We coordinate with the governor's office in anticipation of session to make sure that we're all on the same page, because ultimately any bill that passes the General Assembly has to have the governor's signature on it. And then so we want to make sure on the front end there's as much coordination done, and then we work with the House and Senate Transportation Committee chairs and have the introduction of the bill.
Let's talk about the House and Senate Transportation Committees. You have sort of a home. We have a home for all of our bills. We have a very specific committee, but that doesn't mean that our bills are limited. Bills that would impact the department are limited to transportation, but for the purpose of this conversation, that's where most of our bills go. That is their home. That is where they grow. That is where they change. Talk a little bit about the committee process.
Yeah, you're correct. I mean, the most of our, we'll get a little bit of jargony here, but the Georgia Code, Title 32, is where most of the department's statutory language is. Most Title 32 bills will go to the either House or Senate Transportation Committee, as well as some Title 40 bills that deal with traffic operations. So, yeah, those are, you know, we mostly work through those committees, but from time to time we'll have issues that, you know, a few years ago we were dealing with the issue of utility coordination and the call before you dig law, and so that actually went through other committees outside of transportation, so regulated industries. But mostly, you know, we work very closely with the chairs of the committee. And typically, when legislation is carried, it's carried by one, when transportation legislation is carried, it's usually carried by one of the members of either the House or Senate Transportation Committee. Obviously, if it starts in the House, then it has to pass out the House, make it to the Senate. Senate makes any changes, it's got to go back to the House. And then ultimately, when both chambers have passed the same exact legislative version, it then is presented to the governor for his consideration. So, which is the period of time we're in actually right now, is the governor's 40 calendar days of consideration after the session concludes. So you have 40 legislative days that are typically spread over a three-month period from the session always starts. People say, when does session start? Well, constitutionally, it's always the second Monday in January. So write it down between now and when the Constitution gets changed. The second Monday in January is when the General Assembly convenes. So that's day one. And then day 40 is called sine die. So that's typically at the end of March.
But that's a moving target.
It's a moving target. But then those other 38 days are sort of spread between those, that first and last day. So it's not a continuous day after day of session. They spread it out over the course of 3 months.
I always like to remind people, too, that as a state agency, as a department, we have one bill. When there is road dedications that we work on, and we'll talk about that. But we have what you refer to as the housekeeping bill. And that's looking at, again, talking with people in the department and looking at anything that needs to be cleaned up, anything that needs to be clarified. We are not a bill factory. There is not multiple bills coming out of the department to change and to do. Y'all probably spend a lot of your time being reactive to legislation, potential legislation brought to the table by those outside the department, and then y'all serve as subject matter experts on behalf of the department. Can you explain, because I think that people think that maybe we bring a lot of changes to the table, whereas really, as an agency, we have one, what I hope you would consider a neat package every year, brought to the table, and then you spend a lot of time educating and working with legislators on their potential bills.
Yeah, that's correct. I think one important distinction we make is you use the right verb, educate. We are part of the executive branch. Our board is chosen by the General Assembly, by congressional district, elected by a caucus of districts. So we are accountable at the end of the day to the General Assembly, to the governor, and they are, like us, all accountable to the public. So our job is to analyze the impacts of potential bills and convey what would that do? How does that translate if it were to become law? How does it either improve or potentially impair our ability to deliver the service we're required to do under state law and the Georgia Constitution, which is providing a system of transportation of roads and bridges and multimodal solutions for the state? And so how does any given bill either help in that mission, or to what degree might it hinder? And then ultimately the General Assembly and the governor set the policy by what they ultimately put into law.
So let's talk about some important things. We talked about sine die. We talked about when the first day happens. What is crossover day?
So crossover day is day 28, and all the bills have to pass the chamber they started in by that day, or they are dead. Sometimes these the language from those bills that didn't pass can still get put into other bills after, but crossover day is kind of like the pivotal point for a bill to make it or not. And also there's a certain day that can bills have to be out of committee by, so that's typically like day 25 in the Senate and day 26 or 27 in the House.
Would you say that the calendar becomes very important to y'all between the months of January and the end of March?
I'd say across the board for the whole every agency in the state, when you think about it, that during that period of time, the ability for the law to be changed or for budgets to be adopted, and you know, the department to a certain degree, because a lot of our funding is constitutionally dedicated or statutorily dedicated, we certainly operate in a similar but maybe slightly different sphere than maybe some other agencies, where any given year the entirety of their budget is general funded, and so they have to be even more cognizant of what they the case to be made for those funds.
Josh, explain to me the term biennium.
Well, a biennium basically is that our General Assembly sessions are divided over a two-year period. Or there's every election, our General Assembly, the House and Senate are all up every 2 years. So they are, the biennium is that those 2 years that session is elected to serve. And so they'll have one session the first year. And so any bills that don't make it to the finish line, don't get presented to the governor in the first year of the biennium, can carry over, as they will this year. They will carry over into next year, 2026.
So if I'm a bill, I'm just a bill.
You're just a bill.
And I'm just a bill. And I have made it through. I have made it through crossover day. I have successfully passed over onto the next. But I did not get onto the floor. I did not get a vote. I'm still alive, correct? Okay.
Correct.
I will live for next session.
Yes.
Of the biennium.
You crossed over, but you got passed over.
These poor bills. They need therapy. So I bet they need therapy by the end of this. As do all of us.
Well, and the important one of the things people wonder, why is this a certain way? The crossover day, from a historical standpoint or practical standpoint, was, if you think about it, there are 180 members of the House, and there are 56 members of the Senate. And so crossover day is meant for, in large part, to help not flood the Senate with continuing with House bills. It gives the Senate time to process the House bills and send back what they're going to, or send to the governor what they're going to. And so I think that's a big part of, the structure to that.
Government being fair and balanced, if you will. They're taking into account the amount that one side can pump out, whereas the other is a little more limited.
And invariably, as you get towards the end of the session, there's always some tension about the number of bills or how many bills are. The interesting, if you're over at the Capitol paying attention, you'll see a little bit of the good-natured, hopefully usually stays good-natured, ribbing between the House and Senate about which chamber is working
the upper
harder.
Chamber. Yes, well, I did work for the upper chamber.
Which one's in any given day is working harder to churn out bills than the other one, and they'll make notice if one clocks out early at the day. Well, the so-and-so chamber's gone home. Maybe we should do the same. Well,
notice I didn't say which the upper chamber was. I just said I worked for the upper chamber. Money. We can't do anything at GDOT without money. It's just the nature of what it is. We are we build. We grow. We are infrastructure enthusiasts. We are also moving the needle on freight movement, on people movement. We've got a large state with a large network, which means it has to be funded. Let's talk about the budget, how we fit into the budget process, and what came out of the budget.
So I think this year, the story similar to last year is in the amended budget. You know, the state, I mean, there have been headlines written about the well-managed fiscal house of the state and the large surplus that we're carrying. In last year's amended budget, the governor put in and the General Assembly affirmed $1.5 billion in general fund surplus dollars into the department's budget to increase our budget and help to deliver more projects. this year in the amended 25 budget, we were very, very, very pleased and very thankful to the Governor and General Assembly for putting about an additional billion in the budget, in the amended budget.
I think across the board, both parties, the governor, we have really seen over the past several years how much the legislature and the governor values transportation, all aspects of it, through how we are being met with finances to fit the needs. Because for some of these things, we were so far behind, whether that was resurfacing. You know, when Governor Deal was in office, we talked about how far behind resurfacing was. Bridges, the quality and state of our bridges, making sure that we stayed at the top of that list, that we have really been met with the tools, financial tools that we need as a department to get done what Georgians demand us and need us to do. So kudos, you know, when we talk about funding, sometimes we're really pinching the pennies to get the things done, but kudos to the governor and to the legislature for really acknowledging our needs.
Yeah, and what I'd say there is, if you look at how that $1 billion cascades out, is the first big tranche of it, $265 million, is going to actually go out to local governments. So basically doubling what they receive in their annual LMIG, or that local maintenance improvement grant that goes out to counties and cities. So it's doubling that amount. There's a $500 million, $500 million, that's going to go into the freight infrastructure program. And that's to help advance and move major freight-oriented projects, from continuing to advance the widening of I-16, moving out from Savannah, and some other critical state route projects. There's also $200 million of that surplus is going to the routine maintenance program to offset the impact. And it's important to underscore that's to help give people a sense of scale, the impact of those hurricanes and Hurricane Helene. It's $200 million to help offset the cost of recovery.
Which we are still recovering.
Correct.
And the recovery is ongoing.
So that, I mean, that the department simply just did not have the funds available to be able to cover all those costs. And so the General Assembly and the governor infused $200 million to help offset those costs.
Yeah, I was recently talking with Christina Edwards, who is meteorologist over at WSB, about signage, about what happened, how much signage we have to replace after a hurricane. It's not just the clearing. It's not just, hurricane recovery is so widespread, but it is expensive. And then add on to that a few winter storms. I mean, emergency recovery for the department is costly, but it's necessary. It's essential.
Correct. I mean, it's a necessary function of how you keep your roadway system open, keep the transportation system open. It's the maintenance cost there. And so being able to deal with and, you know, continue to learn, okay, do there continue to be ways to better improve the delivery and response? I think as a department, we've got a very strong system in place among our 7 field districts, among the leadership, and our approach to how we handle, you know, implement these type of events that do seem to, the frequency in terms of the number of impacts of Georgia has seems to have increased. And so making sure that we do everything we can to restore the system is important.
Let's hop back to housekeeping bill. What was on our housekeeping bill this year? What did we get done?
So there are four key items. Three of them deal with project delivery, and the fourth one deals with traffic operations. So the first item, pretty straightforward thing, but very relevant to the topic of media and communications, is that we have a requirement to publish our notices in newspapers, to put two notices in newspapers for any public meetings we have on a project. Well, you know, there's some timing requirements under state law, and some of those timing requirements actually can present a challenge in communities where you don't have a paper that publishes every day. So what the law basically says is that if the paper doesn't publish every day, it gives some flexibility about the timing of when that notice has to be published. The only thing to note about that is it's pretty simple, but it's a recognition of sort of the evolving state of newspapers and communication. The second item would be, if we have, when we're out negotiating right-of-way acquisition and there's a condominium association or condominiums, and we're taking some, you know, just strip of land or green space, just a strip, you know, a common property. It makes clear in the law that the HOA is the point of contact for that negotiation, which will help streamline and reduce confusion in that process. So again, that should help with reducing some of the time it takes to acquire and negotiate right away. The third item, dealing with project delivery, makes it clear in the law that we can work with utilities prior to us letting a project to construction to actually get them to relocate sooner. Just makes it clear that we're able to do that, which, you know, utility relocation can have a big schedule impact.
It tends to be, I will say, from the media aspect, it's the number one thing that has scheduling impact, because utilities have been around for, depending on where you are, they've been around for so long, they may not properly be marked. There's just, there is a lot of delicacy that goes with removing utilities, working with the utility company as their utilities are built into our right-of-way. And it is the number one thing I see when a reporter calls and says, why is this project behind? It is usually because of a utility relocation issue.
Yeah, and so this, so being able to go out there prior to the construction project is going to makes a big impact. Now, it's not going to not be able to be done for every project, but there are certain projects where there's enough lead time where you can really work to relocate those utilities. And I think the other issue is to pivot off of what you just said is you often have multiple utilities, and so the coordination of which utility relocates and then which one has to follow can compound the schedule. So being able to do that earlier in the process can make a huge difference where possible. The fourth item was just codifying our towing recovery incentive program, the TRIP program. And that's a program that exists today where we pay the department, GDOT pays an incentive to a specified tower within an area to quickly remove a tractor trailer that's wrecked on the interstate. And so the incentive payment is what the department pays if it's removed within a set time. And that's to get the roadway cleared and get traffic back moving. The TRIP program success hinges, though, on coordination. It's not just GDOT. It's GDOT working with local law enforcement, working with the towers and local governments. And so that coordination, to improve that coordination, it became necessary to codify it specifically in law. It was authorized under our general powers, but to put the program into law to help improve that coordination among all the parties, because the public benefits greatly when we're able to get those trucks removed, those crashes removed, sooner rather than later. And so those are, you know, three project improvements and one traffic operations improvement.
So that was sort of our checklist. Do you want to give me the highlights, give me the sort of top tier of other bills that impacted the department that, again, weren't part of our legislation, our housekeeping bill, but were bills that went through the General Assembly that will have an impact either on how the department works, if there's something we don't work on anymore. Sort of give me the highlights.
Yeah. So one that directly deals with us but was not our initiative was House Bill 224, introduced by Representative Josh Bonner. And I'll give you some context. Under state law, prohibits the department from working on a road that's not open to the public. So if it's private road or restricted road, the department's not allowed to work on it. So the state has been approached by the U.S. Department of Defense about trying to coordinate and make it possible where U.S. DOD could potentially seek GDOT as either a project manager or construction management to assist with roads on base. The challenge with base roads is they're not open to the public. They're considered private Department of Defense roads. So House Bill 224 makes an exception that if it's a road on base, the U.S. Department of Defense can enter into an agreement with the department using DOD funds to do some type of roadway improvement, whether it's, typically you're probably talking about maintenance and then probably from time to time some new location. But we would basically be, if we're able to work out an agreement with them, if the governor signs this bill, we would be able to work out an agreement with them to provide that service.
So you said something that I want to touch on as part of the process. If the governor signs the bill, explain how many days does it, you know, everything goes to the governor's desk. He has some runway with how to think, and, you know, if he wants to sit on something and really think about its impact, if he wants to give it a second thought, he has how many days?
40 calendar days from the end of session. So you got 40 legislative days that are spread over the course of 3 months. Then when sine die occurs that last day of session, the clock starts ticking 40 calendar days under the Constitution. And that this year that puts the governor's consideration at May the 14th.
Be with you. So. Is May the 14th? May the 4th? Yeah. No, that's May the 4th. Oh, I thought I was there. Yeah. May the 14th. Well, an important date, regardless. So there's also not everything is, you know, it is government. It is politics. Things can get a little tense sometimes. Truck weights is something that the department has worked on for several years, that there is there are people on both sides of that issue. The department has needs and wants of taking care of infrastructure and sort of the repercussions of heavier trucks. So that is a fruitful conversation that happens in the committee, as well as I know we get a lot of questions from the media about the school zone cameras and how there's a love-hate relationship from constituency about those. So how did we sort of touch on those less easy issues this session?
So we'll start with the truck weights one. Obviously, that's one the department's been, from a subject matter expertise, heavily engaged. And to your point about the term educating, trying to our job at the end of the day is we respond to the proposed policy by saying, look, here's the impacts. So in 2023, the General Assembly adopted House Bill 189, which increased the variance, which effectively makes so there's state law says trucks are not supposed to exceed 80,000 pounds, but grants a 5% variance for certain defined commodities, certain products, and so that puts them to 84. Well, in 2023, a subset of those commodities, that 5% became a 10% variance, which allowed them to go to 88,000 pounds. The House Bill 189 expires in June 30th of this year. So the bill, House Bill 164, introduced by Representative Stephen Meeks, removed that sunset. So that basically the law that was passed in 2023 granting this 10% variance, which equals 88,000, translates to 88,000 pounds for certain timber and agricultural commodities, would be the law moving forward. It would no longer be sunsetted. You know, in terms of the department's position, we're in the business of education, and so we are working closely with. We have a study underway with the University of Georgia to move just beyond the realm of theoretical impacts, engineering studies, prior engineering studies, abstract, equations, and going out there and putting into the field way in motion devices and other tools to assess what has been the real world impact. Now, with increased weights, it's much like anything where it has whether it's not eating the best diet or smoking cigarettes, it's those things accumulate over time. So you're not necessarily going to see the effects over you're not going to have the most dire events overnight, but you're going to be able to show the degradation over time and show that you're going to have to replace pavements and bridges much sooner than you would have otherwise. And so what we're trying to do, though, is, okay, well, if the policy is we have to balance the need to move these, move more heavier weights.
Well, factually, what it boils down to is we are, as a state agency, we are Team Georgia, and we are on the same team as ag, and we are on the same team as industry and commodities and freight. With rising tide lifts all ships. So we are on Team Georgia, and we want to be supportive of farmers in South. We want to be supportive of all this, but that doesn't change the reality of the impact of extra weight on our roads. It doesn't change the impact of what that will mean down the road for us having to replace pavement more often, replace bridges more often. So what we're simply saying is, this is going to cause this. So if this happens, in the long run, we're going to need to be able to build bigger bridges, build them, update them more regularly, update our pavement more regularly, and that costs money to the department. So in order for us all to benefit from this, in the long run, we just need you to see the impact on us.
I think the key part is helping us to better quantify the impact. And so the General Assembly can bake that into the calculus when it comes to the department. The goal of asset management is, how long do we expect our pavements to last? What's the percentage condition of all the pavements that we, you know, what kind of condition do we want our pavements in? Certainly, we have historically, at least you hear very often anecdotally, people say they could tell a difference when they cross the state line.
Absolutely.
And so making sure that we keep that standard of pavements and bridges is important to the department.
So another bill, another issue that has become a bit of a hot topic at the Capitol is the automated traffic enforcement in school zones, which really we as a department are just the we're the permit. We are the permittee. We're giving the permits out. So a lot of different groups involved in this, and so we have our specific role in it. And so how was GDOT sort of engaged on any sort of changes or impacts this session?
Yeah, so this, I would probably say this is a tale of two bills, two camera bills. When we got to crossover day, only two bills, House Bill 225 and House Bill 651, were the only ones that crossed over. And throughout this process, before I go into the bills, the department's role has purely been responsive to questions from the General Assembly about what's the permitting process, what are specifications around signage locations, how to make sure that whatever the policy is, whatever the statute reads, it's not in conflict with national standards about sign distance or those type of requirements.
Because we again, as a department, we are not a law enforcement agency. We are not giving Correct. The tickets. We are not collecting the fines. We have a very specific role, which is not those.
Correct. So this topic has, it's kind of come up multiple sessions. It feels like it's reached in some places a fever pitch. Just about not necessarily the concept of trying to improve safety in school zones, but about the enforcement and how is enforcement played out outside of school hours. So that kind of rolling few years of this debate crystallizes two bills passing out of the House. One, again, I mentioned was House Bill 225, which is just a pure repeal. It repealed the ability to issue those permits. Those cameras would have had to cease. And then you had House Bill 651, which sought to reform it and put some additional signage requirements. It further restricted the operation of hours of the cameras, at least in the first iteration of the bill. What do I mean by that? So under current law, the cameras are allowed to function and issue tickets from just before school starts to just after school's out and in the middle of the day. So that middle of the day became a point of contention for some folks, because the theory is, well, if children aren't actively in the school zone or coming and going to school, should the camera be running at that time? So the original version of House Bill 651 just restricted it to 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon. Then that bill, when both those bills went over to the Senate, there were some differences of opinion over there, and ultimately they landed on they passed both bills again, but they made changes. So to the repeal bill, they passed as a repeal bill, but they pushed it out to 2028. So the repeal wouldn't go into effect for a few years. And then they made some changes to House Bill 651 to allow the cameras to still operate in the middle of the day, but not but the local jurisdiction would have to pass a resolution declaring that that's what they were doing. They sent those bills back and some other changes around signage. One of the other things that House Bill 651 had when it left the House that it didn't have when it left the Senate was the requirement to put the signage that basically shows your speed. So to help inform you in the hopes that, again, the goal, I think everyone should, the goal should be no one's speeding through there.
Right. So behavioral changes, so, safety in the school zones to have, you know, there's a consequence if you are. The ultimate consequence being you could hit a child, but sometimes people don't see that, so they need a monetary consequence. So, yes, attaching that for behavioral changes.
And then the Senate made those changes to 651 and 225, sent them back over to the House on sine die. So this is that stage was occurring on the last day of the session. The House did not take any further action on the repeal bill. They did take up House Bill 651 and was trying to revert it back to some of the components that it had to find sort of the middle ground between the Senate amendment and the original House version. And they passed it. However, the Senate actually had adjourned before they could get it. So it'll be one of those things that hangs over into the next session.
How hard is it on a day like Crossover Day or Sine Die to keep up with where your bill is at? How many bills are impacting the department? Again, not necessarily our housekeeping bill, but which had been dealt with. But how hard is it to keep up with the comings and goings of where things are and what's been added and what's not been added and what's up and down?
I'll say this. It's a testament to our legislative team. I want to give a big shout out to Abby. And then typically every session we'll have at least one or two legislative interns that'll just be through that time period, as well as our subject matter offices that are engaged on certain bills. So if a bill's identified to have an impact on the department, we'll track it and just see how it's progressing. You just gotta have a good tracking system in place, and I got incredible kudos to Abby and the legislative internship team. It's a lot of paper, going through a lot of papers and some spreadsheets, and it requires significant effort.
Well done. Give her a raise. But still, do it. No. So, Abby, also, there are times where an idea or a need for change might be identified, but for whatever reason, the legislature can't identify the exact bill to do it. They need more information, and then study committees are born. So do we have any study committees that were born out of this session that will meet sort of in the interim? Walk us through the study, why study committees exist and what happens with them.
Yes, there are two study committees this year. So typically a study committee exists either because the idea is not fully fleshed out and there's not a bill that there can get enough agreement on to pass, or it's something that went through the process but there was no agreement met, no kind of consensus. So we study it in the summer. This year, we have two. So it's SR 216, which is the Senate Study Committee on Vulnerable Roadway Users. So that's looking at pedestrian and cyclist safety in Georgia. And then the other is SR 283, and that's the Study Committee on Airport Height Restrictions. And that's dealing with airports we have some that higher structures have been built nearby airports, and that leads to issues with runways. They have to modify them. Are other issues around the airport.
How does the department sort of weigh in on those study committees? How do we become engaged with those study committees as they are working through the summer?
So we will serve as subject matter experts. There was an AI one last year that we had Alan Davis testify in. Typically the chairman will reach out and ask us to have a presentation, answer their questions, concerns. On SR 283, the commissioner would serve as a member on the study committee. And sometimes they specify that, but as with 216, it just says five Senate members.
You read my brain. That's exactly what I was about to ask you. Is are the study committee? How are the study committees built? How is who sits on them? Is that part of the resolution when the study committee is created that they identify who sits on it? Is it always the transportation committee? How do we know whose minds are working?
So it does specify directly in the resolution. The Senate Transportation Chair would also serve on the Airport Height Restriction Study Committee, and the ACCG and GMA president. So some of them are very specific with who they list out, and some might be like just a subject matter expert in the area. And these are appointed by the Lieutenant Governor's office. And I think there are about 12 to 15 study committees approved by the Senate, but there may not necessarily be 15 study committees. It could just be 5.
Got it. So no rest. No rest for the weary.
Yeah, I'll add something in here. I think the airport study committee is going to be is definitely a hot topic, and where the intersection of that's going to be is the operation of airports in these locations where it's typically where they don't have zoning, so you have adjacent properties that don't have zoning restrictions on them, and so if they either build something or if the trees get too high. The FAA then will restrict, because the airport doesn't have, if the airport can't get the property owner to reduce the, deal with the obstruction, then the FAA will actually restrict the operation of how much of the runway can be used. So the issue deals with operations of airports, but then also private property rights and local governments, zoning. So that's why it's not an easy issue. And that gets to your very point about why they might do a study committee, is to try and hash those things out and see what potentially could be a solution.
I can't imagine an issue that has both a federal, state, and private property rights would be complex in any way possible.
Not at all.
Not at all. Just throw it all in there. Asking y'all to look into the future, what does next year hold?
Well, I think we don't want to get too far ahead. We got to get through see what the governor signs on May 14th. Hopefully he signs House Bill 575, which is the department's legislation. He still needs to sign the full fiscal year budget. I think we all are going to keep our eyes out to the end of the state fiscal year and see how revenues look and what impact revenue collections might translate into next session and the amended budget for 26 and the fiscal year 27 budget, which getting kind of crazy to say things like fiscal year 27, tempus fugit. So
1927.
So I think that's. I mean, we'll begin the process of checking internally to see, okay, in the intervening time since we developed last year's package, are there some operational things that we would identify going into the 2027 or 2026 session? Lost it there for a second.
They all start turning together at some point, don't they?
They do.
So the other thing, one of the other things that come out of session that we get many questions about, it becomes a very popular bill at the Capitol, is road dedications. Abby, you are the queen, if you will, of the road dedication. Can you walk us through how that happens, and then what special road dedications do we have this year?
Of course. So the road dedication process starts with a request by a legislator to name a specific road, intersection, roundabout, whatnot, after a person in their district.
And we have to make sure that that's not already been named. Yes. So the lot of maps.
So OTD is integral to this process, and I am very appreciative of them for all their help.
Well, when you think about just how much infrastructure the department is in charge of, and roads and bridges, and making sure that something that has already been dedicated is not rededicated, it makes my mind spin. We dedicate certain roads or bridges on the state system to various individuals, and those are, I guess, nominated. Is nominated the right word? For a legislator will bring us their desire to have a part of our system dedicated. What roads, bridges, areas of our infrastructure did we dedicate this year?
So this year there were 3 road dedication resolutions. Of note, we have one SR-231, and this was to honor 5 fallen officers. And this was done for Officer Jeremy Labonte, Deputy Sheriff Brandon Cunningham, Patrolman Christopher Lee Ruse, Officer Scott Reiner, and Trooper Jimmy Sinizar. And this was highlighted on the House floor on Sine Die.
So in addition to that dedication, there was one that had special meaning to the department.
Yes. HR 7 featured a interchange for the late board member Johnny Floyd, and this is the interchange of I-75 and US 280 in Cordial. The late Senator Sheila McNeil is honored on the other resolution.
So that, you, again, with all the other things that you have that you're tracking, a really important part. I know it means a lot, not only to the families of those who are being honored or dedicated, but to the legislators who really take great value and pride in being able to dedicate a part of the state system to someone who has either left us or is much deserved. Well, I wish y'all both the best of luck this summer working through those study committees. I know those are very important in moving legislation along in the future, making sure that as the department we're offering the right information. So your job is never done. It's not just legislative session. Y'all are always working for the department, and we certainly appreciate everything y'all do. And we look forward to having you back on the podcast next year to talk about what exciting bills the department passes, what we have in our future. So thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a suggestion for a topic for Ahead of the Curve, we are happy to hear it. We'd love to talk about what you want to know about. We're here to educate. We're here to promote safety. And we're here to talk about the great things that go on at Georgia DOT. You can reach us at aotc@dot.ga.gov. Again, that's Ahead of the Curve, aotc@dot.ga.gov. We'll see you back for the next episode. Thanks so much.